Stay tuned after the show for a message from Chevron.
The United States sets out on the road to cut greenhouse gases in half by the end of this decade. That's where we're headed as a nation.
I'm Anthony Adragna, and this is Politico Energy. Last week, world leaders celebrated the return of the U.S. to a position of leadership in fighting climate change.
I'm really thrilled by the game-changing announcement that Joe Biden has just made, and I'm very proud that the U.K. is doing the same.
But even as they applauded America's return, many of these same leaders and their governments at home remain skeptical that the United States will stick to the pledge that President Joe Biden set. Today, my colleague Carlos Prieto caught up with Ryan Heath, who's in Australia, on why the world still doubts that the U.S. will come through in fighting climate change. It's Monday, April 26th.
So Ryan, from the U.S., at least, it looked like the climate summit was a win for Biden because he got some of the biggest economies to attend. He got some commitments. And probably most importantly, he was able to announce the U.S. revisited pledge. But you got to follow this summit from a different perspective. And I'm wondering if that's also what it looked like from your side.
I think it's important to acknowledge that there was progress at this summit. So I don't want to play Debbie Downer 100%.
China will strive to peak carbon dioxide emissions before 2030 and achieve carbon neutrality before 2060.
In Argentina, honramos el Acuerdo de París, incrementando la ambición climática.
But at the same time, I think it's fair to say that after 24 years of the U.S. jumping in and out of global climate deals, that a lot of other governments, they come to the table with some skepticism. There's goodwill, but there's skepticism. And while the greener governments around the world are very happy with how this is going, they're not so much the problem here. The question is whether the really big emitters, China in absolute terms, Australia and Saudi Arabia in relative terms, whether they're going to change course as a result of any of this. And so far, they're not doing that.
For Australia, it is not a question of if or even by when for net zero, but importantly, how. That is why we're investing in priority new technology solutions through our Technology Investment Roadmap Initiative.
With the benefit of hindsight, the Paris Climate Agreement is a necessary base for global climate action, but very few people consider it to be sufficient. And one of the reasons why the Paris deal was sealed was it left open-ended how each country would deliver the commitments that it made in that document. But that's the flaw in the plan as well. And so the very particular point that a lot of governments have is that Congress really needs to be involved, and everyone can read the internet or a newspaper or turn on an international television channel and see that Congress is not united around what to do on climate change.
The United States should aim to cut its greenhouse gas emissions in half by the end of the decade. It's a great goal. I fully support it.
I guess the key to it is, how do you address it? I think most Republicans have a lot more confidence in technology than clamping down on the economy with something like the Green New Deal.
So Biden can make promises, and that helps steer the discussion. It helps direct markets. He can also find ways to deliver a lot of money to small and developing countries who need support in order to basically cope with the front line of climate change. But he can't halve American emissions without Congress being involved in some way.
And it's interesting because we were talking to Zach Coleman, and if I'm remembering correctly, he said that the Biden administration is also trying to project that they don't necessarily need the infrastructure plan and that they can act through executive action. But that's something that I have to imagine these countries have heard long before, and that might not be doing the appeasing effect that the administration thinks it's doing.
Well, the thing to bear in mind there is that there's a lot of components for making up emissions cuts of 50% or greater. So yes, some of it will get done, even if Congress throws all of its toys out of the pram. But when you look at what the toughest targets in the world are, you start to see that you're really only going to get to the top end of that range that the scientists increasingly tell us we need to hit if you have all of the incentives. And as soon as you start removing those elements out of your sort of deck of cards, then you're in trouble. You're not going to hit those tough targets. You'll make some progress, but it's not going to keep the world at those Paris climate targets.
Great. So I think now that we had a conversation outside and with foreign diplomats, it comes back to the easy work of working from within our borders here in the US.
And there is one very important point to note there. Because the US is such a decentralized system, US climate action never really stopped, even when the Trump federal government put a pause on how the federal government engaged. So the US has been doing reasonably well, given the lack of federal support over the last 4 years for these sorts of efforts. So it's not starting from zero. At the same time, it's a very complicated web of people that are now having to coordinate, construct, coordinate, and implement these policies. So the US has the advantage of being able to apply a lot of brains, a lot of bodies, and a lot of finances to this problem. But also, it has probably the most complex infrastructure for handling the problem.
Pretty much all throughout this past week, climate action meant so many things. It wasn't anymore about just electric vehicle infrastructure or energy transition. It went through finance. It went through divesting from projects. So it really felt like a very wide encompassing issue, which we know climate is. And I'm wondering if there was a particular instance in which this summit seemed to address that more than others.
Well, I think one of the biggest shifts over the past 10 years has been a new mindset within financial services. We saw when the Paris Climate Convention occurred, the role of corporates and banks at that event was really different to previous global climate events. You know, there had been a sea change in how they viewed their role. Now, some of that is marketing. That was just reading where they thought consumers were going, and it hasn't fully translated into where their dollars are invested. But it's been a big change, and you start to see the mobilization of a lot of money, including via figureheads such as Michael Bloomberg or Mark Carney, the former governor of the Bank of England. And I think that if we can just get a bit more of that money into the small and developing countries, that's going to make a real tangible difference.
Also, on Friday, California Governor Gavin Newsom ordered state regulators to ban fracking permits and to look for a way to completely end fossil fuel extraction. Earlier this month, the state's legislature failed to get a bill that would ban fracking due to Democratic opposition, a bill that had originally come forward at the request of Governor Newsom. But following criticism that he failed to adequately support this bill, Newsom, who originally had said he didn't believe the governor's office had the power to impose a fracking ban, directed his administration to halt permits by 2024. Subscribe to Politico Energy wherever you listen, and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. If you want more energy news in your inbox, subscribe to our newsletter at politico.com/morningenergy. I'm Anthony Adragna, and I'll talk to you again tomorrow.
Chevron is lowering the carbon emissions intensity of their operations, exploring renewable fuels of the future, and investing in low-carbon technologies. Because it's only human to protect the home we share. Learn more at chevron.com/lowercarbon.